You're listening to the Young Opportunist Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. This is actually the first episode of 2022. And Reese, let's be real, we were kind of fanboying over today's guest. And we're still sort of pinching ourselves that he actually came on the show. Today, we're joined by Robert Leonard, the VP of Growth and Innovation at the Investors Podcast Network, host of the Real Estate 101 podcast, an ex-accounting and finance professional, and also a future billionaire. We'll explain later in the episode. In this interview, we cover key strategies on how to manage time efficiently when working full-time in the corporate world while having your side hustle, how Robert transitioned from working his corporate 9-to-5 to pursuing his various side hustles full-time, the importance of hard work as a means to create your own luck, practical advice for podcast brands looking to scale and make an impact, Robert's experience completing the 75 Hard Challenge after 3 failed attempts, and much, much more. Let's get underway with today's episode. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode. As we said in the introduction, we're joined today by Robert Leonard. We've been listening to Robert for some time now, I think ever since the first episode ever launched, off the back of We Study Billionaires at the Investors Podcast. Yeah, I guess we're just massive fans of what you stand for and all the valuable content you're putting out via all your podcasts. So I guess after all that, Robert, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm happy to be here and happy to support you guys any way I can.
I guess for our audience, I feel like we know you pretty well, even though this is the first time we've talked to you. But could you, I guess, tell our audience a little bit about your journey and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, I'll give a quick rundown of my background. We can dive into any of the specific points that you guys want to talk about a bit further. But I grew up in a very blue-collar family, single dad, had no intentions of going to college. A couple things in my life happened, ended up going to college, first one in my family to ever do that. Ended up going the corporate finance route, you know, working in a corporate job that many people are told that they're supposed to do. And I did that for a while. I got really interested in stock investing, studying Warren Buffett. I did that for about 8 or 9 years. And then I learned about real estate investing, kind of accidentally became a real estate investor. And today, real estate has actually overtaken my passion for stock investing. I'd say I'm more of a real estate investor today than I am even a stock investor. I still like them both, but more of a real estate investor today. And today I host a couple podcasts, entrepreneur, work with TIP to work on some projects there. So I got a bunch of different things going on. As I said, real estate investor, so I own rental properties as well. And yeah, that's what takes up all my time.
So I want to go into the uni or college, I guess, degree that you studied. Was that just purely like commerce, finance?
So my undergrad was in finance and then I had a minor in economics. And then my MBA, I got with a double major in finance and accounting.
Yeah, that's awesome. A lot. We believe that so many people can relate to that kind of general pathway of doing uni or college and then stepping into the corporate world. You know, when you're at uni, your goal is to get the best grades possible just to get your foot in the door. And then from there, it's just such a competitive world. You just have to try and climb the corporate ladder. But for others, that's not really their goal, and their goal is to just pursue their own business journey and dive out into the entrepreneurial world. In your case, you were balancing your side hustle whilst working full time as you needed the income from your 9-to-5 to help fund the business and living expenses. How did you know you were ready to take the leap and pursue your side hustle full time? Was it simply once it started producing enough income, or was it something beyond that?
So it's actually a bit of an interesting story as to how it turned out versus what I expected to do and kind of what my plan was. I believe that it was Mark Cuban that I was talking to that gave me this advice, but it could have been somebody else, but I'm pretty sure it was Mark Cuban. And he told me that I need to, and anybody, but not just me specifically, but anybody that is in a similar position to what I was. He said to work the job that pays you the most money that requires the least amount of your time. So if you get a promotion or you could go to a different job that pays more money, but takes 2x or 3x or 4x the time and you can't work on your other stuff, might not be worthwhile if your goal is to work on side hustles or become an entrepreneur. So he said, work a job that pays you the most, that gives you the most free time. And so I took that to heart and that's what I did. I actually had a couple job opportunities that I could have taken, but they would have paid me significantly more than I made, but they would have taken a lot more of my time. So I decided to decline those. And the reason that he gives that advice is because he wants you to have the income from your job so you don't have to make decisions with your business just to make money. Because a lot of times what's right in the short term for a business decision isn't right for the long term, especially if you need to make money. If you need to make money right away, you're going to make some short-term decisions that might actually hurt you in the long term. And so that might be what you do if you don't have another income. But if you have a decent job and you're earning some income, you can make long-term business decisions. And so that was the philosophy that I took. I said, okay, I'll continue to work my day job. And then eventually, once my side hustles or my businesses that I'm building, once they replace my W-2 job income, then I'll quit and I'll do them full time. And so that was my plan. But then, and the reason that I was able to do that was because I had no bosses that cared that I was doing this stuff on the side. Many of them knew and many of them didn't care. And then I was in one position and I reported to the CFO and we got a new CFO. So my boss had moved to a different position and they hired a new CFO. The new CFO, that was my boss, didn't like that I was working on things on the side. And she ultimately gave me an ultimatum. She called me into her office one day and said, hey, I heard you're doing X, Y, and Z outside of work. You either need to choose your career here or you need to drop the things you're doing outside of work. And I just kind of nodded and said, okay, I'll forget what I'm doing on the side. Because at the time I was making long-term decisions with my side hustles and businesses. So they weren't generating that much income and they definitely couldn't replace my six-figure salary. I said, okay, I'm not really ready or able to quit and do those full time yet. So from there, I just kind of yes my way to stay there for, I think it was like 6 or 9 months, and ultimately just kind of kicked it up a gear with my side hustles and my businesses because I knew that I didn't want to stay there, and ultimately was able to replace most of my income with the side hustles and businesses. And it wasn't 100%, but it was close enough that I was comfortable with it. And I took the leap. Ended up quitting my, or quote unquote retiring from the corporate world on my 26th birthday, just earlier this year. And yeah, almost a full year into the full-time entrepreneurship kind of journey.
Wow. Not many people can say that they got that advice from Mark Cuban. That's incredible. Before we dive in, because we do want to have a bit of a focus on, obviously you've killed it in the podcast industry, but could you talk our audience through some of those other side hustles you have and even just touching on real estate for a moment?
Yeah, today it looks like the podcast. I consider real estate more of a side hustle than anything for me right now because I do a lot of it, but it's not like my main gig. So I consider that a side hustle. That includes RV rentals. I just got into some Airbnb stuff. So that's all kind of a side hustle. And then kind of my main gig is I do consulting for podcast companies, and that's like my main source of income. And so those are... And also I actually just signed a book deal to write a real estate book. So that's another like side hustle, you could say. So I have all kinds of stuff that's kind of interrelated in a sense, but they're all mostly side hustles.
Yeah. Wow. You have so much going on. We saw that on your socials, on Instagram, the Airbnb and the RV as well. So has it been going well?
Yeah, it's going really well. Really well. Yeah. I'm actually trying to consolidate things too and really focus. And, when you work on too many things, you don't do any of them well. And so I probably had 5 more different things that I was working on before, and I've really tried to narrow it down to just a couple. So that's really what I'm trying to do today is really, really narrow down and focus on just a few things.
Yeah, for sure. I want to jump back to sort of when you were working that corporate job as well as doing your side hustle, the podcast. So I guess for those, including us, that are in that stage where we're working full-time or studying full-time and trying to get those hours in on our side hustle, what are some key strategies you utilize to manage your time efficiently when you're working full-time in the corporate world while also having a side hustle?
I've been asked this question a lot throughout my career for various reasons. Some people know this. I don't talk about it at a ton, but some people know that I had a son at, I think I was 22 or 23. So I was pretty young and it was unexpected. I was still finishing up my MBA program. I did a very difficult accounting license. It's very similar to the CPA. Mm. For anybody that's familiar with that, it's called the CMA. So I was studying for that all while having a newborn, working a full-time career, podcast. I mean, all kinds of stuff going on. So people are always asking me like, how do you manage your time? And I mean, I do have some strategies that we can talk about and I'll briefly explain those. But for the most part, it's honestly just pure hard work. I mean, there's just a saying that I love, and it's just, there's nothing to it but to do it. Just do it, And it's just, a lot of people look for shortcuts, and I'm not saying that there aren't like different strategies and things that I'll explain that do help, but it's really, when you boil it down, it's just putting in the hard work. It's choosing to go down to your little office space and work on your side hustle at 9 o'clock at night instead of sitting on the couch and watching Netflix. Or, you know, it's sacrifice for what you really want to do versus what feels comfortable. And so a couple of the things, I don't watch TV pretty much never. I mean, today, like lately, I watch a little bit more, but for the most part, for like 5-6 years, I didn't watch any TV at all. No Netflix. I didn't have any Netflix subscription. I have no cable. I have nothing. I don't have a TV in my bedroom. I have one TV in my house. It's in the living room and it literally gets dusty because I don't ever touch it. So that's really helpful because when people look at their time, if they audit their time, I bet they'll see that they spend way too much time watching TV. And today when I do watch TV, I'm almost like, I very rarely sit down and just watch TV by itself. I almost always am working. Like I can answer emails while I work, or I can write show notes for the podcast, or I can underwrite real estate deals, or I can answer like listeners' questions, or there's all kinds of stuff I can do. If I'm in my office, I'll have TV up on one of my monitors if I want to watch something like a football game or something like that, and I'll work on my other one. So very rarely do I spend time watching TV. And also two other things that have been really big for me is I created this thing called the daily time log. And it's just this Google sheet, like an Excel file that basically I have mine up for today. I've literally done this. I think I have like 900 or so of them, if not more, maybe 1,000 that I've done every single day. And on it, I write the date, I write what time I woke up, how many hours I slept, and then I write one thing I'm grateful for every day. Then I write down what I'm going to learn for the day, like how I'm going to spend 30 to 60 minutes learning. I rate my productivity from 1 to 10. I write down what my physical activity is for the day, and then I write down what I struggled with, and then I write my main three goals. So these are not my goals for the day, they're just my goals overall. Like, what are my three major goals that I'm working towards? And then below that, I have my task list or my to-do list for the day. And I rank them from 0 to however many tasks I do. And I put them in order of importance and how I want to work on them. And then I just go through the list throughout the day. And so that's kind of how I stay on track and work on things throughout the day. I have one more thing. The last thing I realized is that there's a big difference between time management and efficiency. So there are, I think there's this misunderstanding that if you sit down at your, let's just say you sit down at your computer and you work for an hour and your output, let's just say it's whatever, we're going to make believe some units here, but let's just say you sit down and work for an hour and you produce 3 units or 4 units, whatever that unit is. But let's just say you produce 3 or 4 units. Now, let's say instead you take maybe 30 minutes and you work out and then you use the remaining 30 minutes that you have. And yeah, you have half the time, but let's just say you, because you're so much more productive, you're so much more focused, you have so much more mental clarity from getting a good workout in or physical activity, whatever it is. Now, maybe in 30 minutes, even though you spent half the time, you produce, let's say 6 or 7 units. So you're working half the time, but you're so much more effective and you're producing more units, whatever that is. And so I think that's a big misconception that people have is they say, oh, I don't have time to work out or do this or whatever it is. It's you make the time for it and then you become more productive because of it and you use your other time better. And so that's been really big for me in just making sure I get everything done. And then I utilize all my time as best I can. When I'm driving anywhere, I always have podcasts going. I don't really have any dead or downtime for the most part.
Yeah, wow. And for those that can't see the screen right now, if you look in Robert's background, he's got the harder you work, the luckier you get, which is, it's so true. And that's something that we talk about a lot on the podcast, that you create your own luck. And look, it probably came from you, Robert. But yeah, it's so true. When it comes down to it, when you boil it all the way down, it really is hard work at the end of the day.
Yeah. And no shortcuts, no trying to cut corners.
And us being, like, I guess, human beings, which are lazy, and we always try to find shortcuts and we want the simple, easy, we want the 5-minute ab burner, we want all of these things. But it's so true. If you do want to get your goals or be successful one day, at the end of the day, it does come down to just grit and hard work.
And I love that you say, you know, we need to be comfortable in, like, being uncomfortable. And I want to touch on your experience with, like, 75 hard as well, because we've kept up to date on that with your Instagram. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it was your first time. I can't remember the first time why you stopped. It was because you broke your ankle at motocross or something, and then you had to do it again, and you finally just completed it just recently. So yeah, could you touch on that and talk through a little bit about your experience with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So before we get into 75 hard, one thing I just want to touch on really quick is you guys mentioned how everybody looks for shortcuts, and that's 100% true. And I used to do that myself. What I've learned is that the shortcuts are actually harder. Like, people are looking for it as a quicker, easier way. But what people don't realize is the shortcuts usually end up being the longer, harder way. It's kind of like this weird dynamic, but you take a shortcut and it doesn't work. So then you do another shortcut, and then you do another shortcut, and you do another shortcut. And by the time you look back, if you had just done it right the first time, didn't take any shortcuts and just took the long-term approach, it's probably shorter and easier than all these shortcuts that you had to add up to even get close to where you are from taking the long-term approach. So it's this weird dynamic that if you can learn that, it's huge for you.
You touched on that. Yes, there needs to be hard work, but you also need to use your time efficiently. Because it's easy for me to come down to the studio, jump on my computer, and then type away for 2 hours. And yeah, I'm producing like two units. And that's not too great. But what are some strategies I guess people could do to be more efficient? Is that writing down their goals the night before? Or
I personally, I'm a little bit biased. I think fitness is huge. And I think that's the biggest thing that people can do. And I don't necessarily mean, sometimes it gets taken out of context and people think that they need to become Mr. Olympia or, some bodybuilder. And that is not at all the case. That's kind of the style of fitness that I'm into. I'm big into weightlifting, but for a normal person, just go for a walk, a brisk walk, or get something where you get a little sweat, get a little sweaty, get your blood flowing. That's all it has to be. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. And so I think that's the biggest thing. It really helps with your health generally, like your mental clarity, your motivation. When I get home from the gym or working out, even when I go for walks, like, I feel so motivated when I get back, and that really helps me be a lot more efficient. And then the other thing is just be organized in what you're working on. If you sit down at your computer and you have stuff to do, but you don't know exactly what it is you need to do, you're going to spend a lot of time figuring that out. And two, you're just going to have, you're going to be like, oh, let me just pick up my phone real quick. And, you go through social media or whatever the case is. And then you look up and you waste an hour. If you know when you sit down, these are the exact things that you need to do, then you just get right to it and you have less distractions or less chance of getting distracted. And so those are kind of the really two things that I think can really help people be more effective.
Yeah.
But so on the 75 hard.
Yeah.
So 75 hard. It was actually my fourth time. It took me four times to complete it. I failed it three times. And then the fourth time is when I did it. So total, I think I've done probably close to 120 days, maybe of 75 hard. The first time was, I failed on day 42, I believe it was. And I missed one of the workouts. I had done everything else that I needed to do, drank the water, read, did one of the workouts, et cetera. But I missed one of the workouts, and, I could make excuses for it. I just chose not to do it. It was the plain and simple was the reason. I was up at, my family has a small camp on a lake where I live. And so I was up there with my son, spending some time with the family. And I had been up there a couple of days before that, and I had done my workouts. So there's no reason why I couldn't have done it. I was just sitting by the fire. It was a nice night, hanging out with everybody. And instead of saying, okay, I need to step away for 45 minutes and go do my workout, I just said, I'm not going to do it. And I just chose not to do it. And I failed. And so that was tough. I ended up, I think I took a short break, and then I got right back to it again. And this time I didn't have it. I was burnt out. I don't know what it was. And I failed after like 5 or 6 days. And then I took a while off. I took probably 6 months before I tried it again. And this third time, I felt the best I had yet. Out of the first two times, this was the best I felt. I was crushing it. Everything was going really, really well. I had great structure. I had everything. There was no doubt that I was going to do it. And so I'd finished 13 days, and then I was on the 13th day. I had already finished everything on my 13th day. So the 13th day was done. But on that evening, I was at a motocross race because I raced motocross, and I broke my leg. And so I was sitting in the hospital, and I was like, oh man, if I don't do my stuff tomorrow, because I'd already finished the day, so I was good. But then the next day I was like, if I don't do my stuff, I'm going to fail. And so my intention was to just do some sort of workouts with a broken leg. I figured I could do a rower, or I could sit outside and do weights, or I could do something where I'm like just sitting down and I'm not on my leg. I could figure something out. So that was my plan. And then I woke up the morning of the 14th day, and I had so much pain. I was literally bedridden for 2 weeks. I don't think I got out of bed. So I just couldn't do it. And so I failed on day 14 there. And that was probably the hardest failure, because I really felt like I was going to do it that time. And then basically about 2 weeks after I got my cast, my doctor told me that I was able to walk on it. I said, all right, I can walk on this thing. We're getting right back to 75 hard. And so I got right back to it. And there is how I finished it to this day. I didn't miss another day. Went 75 days straight from there. And battled through the broken leg, broke my hand. I got a concussion. I got COVID all within 75 days. And but got it all done. Didn't miss a single thing. Didn't make any excuses. Didn't sacrifice anything. I had some great workouts. And got it done.
That's some Goggins stuff.
Yeah, David Goggins in the making.
We've been really enjoying the US fitness fanatics and just absolute animals like Goggins and Jocko. And it just comes down to that, just grit. People say when they do the 75 hard, it makes them either get out of a rut or makes them join this journey where they get onto the next fitness goal, I guess. So some people I've heard they've done the 75 hard and then they started getting into marathon running. And from then on, it's just like they've just ingrained this habit within them and worked hard. Has that happened with you?
Yes and no. I think I have always done fitness has been really easy for me. I've always been in shape. I've always loved working out. So the workout part of 75 hard was really easy for me. And it was more, it's really more of a mental thing. And it's unfortunate because I do share pictures of the physical transformation and I do talk about that because that's what you can see. Like, I can't show you how my brain has changed from when I started to today. I wish I could, because I know that that would be a much bigger transformation than what my body went through. And a lot of people mischaracterize 75 hard as some fitness challenge, and it's not. It's a mental challenge. It just so happens to have a physical component to it. And so the reason you said of getting out of ruts is exactly why I did it the first time. I was in a very bad rut. It was probably the worst rut that I've ever been in my life, both personally, like mentally. It was just a really bad time for me. And so I was like, all right, I need to do this. And I think that's why I got through so many days the first time. I went through 43 days is because it really got me out of that rut. And every time since then was just kind of like, all right, I'm feeling kind of down. Let's get to it again. And I've noticed that it really does help.
So this next part, we really want to dive into the podcasting world. You're at the top of that table at the moment, and you're someone that we really idolize in that space. I still remember when we first started the podcast, Ben and I would always ask each other, like, how are we going to get this guest on the show? He's way too big for us. He's not going to want to come onto the podcast, and doubted ourselves completely. But we soon realized you just have to shoot your shot. The worst that's going to happen is they're going to say no, then we move on and just ask the next person. In your case, you've interviewed some of the best and biggest entrepreneurs in the world. What are some strategies you use, especially when first starting out, to get larger guests on your podcast?
I think probably the biggest thing that people miss when they're trying to get big names on the show is reach out to people that are already going on podcasts. Like, if you have somebody who's like an A-list guest that you want to have on the show, if they've never done a podcast before, I'm not saying they won't say yes, but the chances of them saying yes are probably a lot smaller than if you have another A-list guest who goes on podcasts frequently, or at least has done them in the past. At least they know what podcasting is and they know kind of how to do it. They've recorded before. Like, there's just a lot less barriers to entry there. So I think a lot of times people are going after these guys who have never done a podcast or not big in the podcasting industry, but they just prefer to talk to them. And so, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just going to be a little bit harder of an uphill battle for you to get them on the show. And then second, it's kind of just a numbers game. Like you guys said, you just shoot your shot and you're going to get a lot of no's. You're going to get a lot of emails that don't get responded to, and you just can't take it personally. People have a lot of stuff going on. I know, like, I'm not big compared to a lot of people, but I can't even keep up with all my DMs and emails either. So I can only imagine what somebody like Jocko or Goggins is going through, right? Like, they must have 100x what I have. And so it's really just, it's a numbers thing. You reach out and eventually enough people will say yes. The other piece of that too is you just need to get a couple. Like, once you get one or two, what you do is you leverage them, their name, to get other people. So that's kind of what happened with me. Is I got a couple big guests early on, and then I just leveraged their name and said, hey, we just had so-and-so on. Do you want to join too? And they're like, oh, I'm friends with that person. Yeah, I'll come on. And then you leverage those two people, and then it comes three and four and so on and so forth. And you just, before you know it, you could more or less reach out to anybody you want and they'll come on.
Yeah. Well, we've,
It's kind of like, I guess you can relate to like online dating. We've been left on red.
Don't even read it, man.
No, we either get no replies or we get some really nice like no's.
Or an automated message from, you know, just
from a VA, virtual assistant.
Could you specifically dive into the kind of message structure that you utilize while reaching out to guests, and what kind of platform do you reach out to them on? Because this is something that Ben and I, when we first started and through now, we try and either get them through their social media, or if we can get an email, that's even better.
It's like a golden ticket.
Yeah, it is. So yeah, could you touch on that?
Yeah, I haven't had any luck with social media. I always go directly through email most of the time. And I've had my assistant reach out to some people. Well, my assistant has decided to reach out to some people through social, and she didn't get anybody either. So I prefer email. And so what I do in an email is the first thing I do is I lead with the value that they get for coming on the show. These people's time is valuable. First thing I tell them is how they're going to, like, why should they do it for themselves? Like, what is the value for them? And then from there, I provide validity to what we're doing, like who else has been on the show. So value for them, then validity of the show, who has been on before. And then from there, I give the ask. Hey, I just need 30 to 60 minutes of your time. You mind hopping on a call? So first thing, hey, you're going to reach a million listeners. This is really going to help your business, your product, your whatever. And then from there, it says, oh, and we've also had Kevin O'Leary, Lewis Howes, Jesse Itzler, et cetera, et cetera. So you're in good company. We're not just some, you know, little rinky dinky show. And then from there, hey, would you mind coming on the show for 30 to 60 minutes? Let's talk about X, Y, and Z. Bam. Done. And you want to keep it pretty short. You don't want to go too long. I think each one's like maybe a sentence or two, probably not much more than that. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Try to come up with a catchy email subject line too, if you can. And yeah, that's the process.
Yeah, that's great advice.
And this is our little kind of utilize this as a kind of like a little private consulting session, especially to pick your brain on the podcasting world. Is just an honor. And yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. And especially, because I guess podcasting in Australia is sort of only kind of just picking up, I guess, especially when compared to the US. So we've had a lot of people reach out, since we've sort of launched the podcast, even in our local area. Like I would say 7 or 8 podcasts have started up. Yeah. And yeah, we thought, why not get one of the godfathers of podcasting on? And yeah, they can share some of that knowledge as well, which has been awesome. So I know that the Investors Podcast, TIP, took a very different strategy when they launched We Study Billionaires. And that's very different to a lot of other podcasts. So they did almost no social media marketing, or I guess marketing in general. Instead, they sort of grew naturally via word of mouth, and similar to your podcast as well, actually. Yeah, the whole TIP brand sort of grew naturally. Mm. I guess, what are the benefits and downfalls of this strategy, and what's the most effective strategies you use to grow your podcast?
To be frank, that's not going to work today. Like the strategy they did with We Study Billionaires is not going to work today. You can't just put it out there and hope people find it, because they won't. Back, you know, Stig and Preston are great, and I think they would have found success no matter what they did. But the reality is that they rode the tailwinds of the podcasting industry to get We Study Billionaires to where it was. They were one of the first podcasts to release. This is back in like 2014. I know podcasting had been around before that, but they were one of the first ones to study value investing, Warren Buffett style specific. So they just, as the podcast industry has grown over the last almost 10 years, they've just had a huge tailwind behind them that has helped them grow. I mean, they've made a lot of really good decisions. They've had a lot of really great guests. They're great business guys. So like they've done a lot of things to help them, but they were also in the right place at the right time, right? They, like you said, with the poster behind me, they worked hard and they got lucky. And I mean, if they didn't put themselves out there for the podcast, they're not going to get lucky. You know, that's not going to just fall in their lap. So I think the biggest thing that they did was just the timing, and some of the early guests that they had were really helpful as well. Now today, some people have said to me, you know, you're part of TIP, so no wonder why your show has gotten so big. And they're partially right about that in a sense, but in a sense they're wrong, because what they don't know is that we've launched actually 4 shows that are out in the network. 2 of them have failed. 2 of them have succeeded. The 2 that have succeeded were my shows. And so I'm not saying that I'm like anything special, but I mean, clearly it's not just the brand that is going to allow, like you can't just launch any podcast because of the brand and have it be successful. So what I think we've done with the Millennial Investing in Real Estate shows that have been helpful is we did do social. We did get active on there. Stig and Press, Stig is very not into social media, but Preston is. And so that's why Bitcoin Fundamentals is doing really well. So I've gotten a little bit of a presence on social media, which has helped. And then the second thing is a lot of people, we talked about getting big guests. A lot of people really want to go after those whales. But what I think is actually more beneficial is reaching out to people that have between 10,000 and maybe 100,000 or 200,000 followers on social. Because what happens is I've actually, some of my biggest guests, like with the most famous people, have actually been some of my lowest downloaded episodes because they don't share it. So it's great that they have 2 million to 5 million followers. That's great. But if they don't tell their followers to go listen to it, it doesn't matter how many followers they have. Whereas if you get somebody that has 25,000 followers that are super engaged with them and they're willing to share it, if they post it out, now 25,000 people, or at least a percentage of those people, are going to see it and they're going to come to the show. So some of my biggest downloaded episodes are actually the guys that are a little bit smaller, but have an engaged audience. Like I said, between 10 and 100 or 200,000 followers that are willing to share it. So those are the types of things that I did, was really seek out people that are willing to share the show that actually have an audience and not just the biggest names. And the second thing is titles. A lot of times people get really wrapped up in SEO. I'm not sure that SEO is really working great in podcasting yet on podcasting apps. I think people, and I could be wrong about this, this is totally anecdotal, but I think people pick podcast episodes more based on the title rather than the algorithm via SEO showing them something that they should listen to. So for me, I was always really trying to come up with the most creative or crafty titles that I could to really get people interested in what they should click on. And, you know, one example is why Warren Buffett might not be the greatest investor of all time. And like, it's a little clickbaity, but it, like, people are gonna be like, oh, you know, what's going on with this episode? And that's like one of our most downloaded episodes ever. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, things like that are going to be really helpful to grow your show.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I guess for the listeners, SEO is search engine optimization. Do you know how well it sort of works via, like, if someone's searching for it on Google, does it still transfer over to a podcast app? I'm not even too sure.
Yeah, so it does. For in that perspective, yes. If like you're Googling it, SEO is actually important. But if you're looking like just in your app, it's not really helpful.
Yeah.
But like so- if you
relying on the app.
You search for something and it'll come up from like your podcast player, whoever you're hosting through should have their own like site for each episode. So if you Google something that's related to that, it should come up.
As stated before, you've interviewed some incredible guests. Who has been the most kind of influential guest that you've had on your show?
Obviously a tough question.
Yeah, I've been, you know, honored to have a lot of really great guests on the show. I think it's hard to say just generally because there's different guests have taught me different things. Some have taught me about life. Some have taught me about business, entrepreneurship. Some have taught me about stock investing. Some have taught me about real estate investing. So I guess just generally speaking, the biggest thing I've learned from talking to all these really successful people, whether they're A-list guest or they're a little bit lower, either way, what I've learned, the biggest thing is not so much from what people have said, but it's just kind of the experience that I've gone through from talking to them, is that all of these people, guys and gals, they're the same as us. Like they, a lot of times we put these people on pedestals and we think that they have these certain skills or opportunities or resources that we don't have. When the reality is, when you get to see them in their element and you're recording a video like this with them, you see that they're real people just like us. So I'm not going to say any specific names, but there's been some really big guests that I've talked to when their dog or cat will jump on their lap while we're recording, or their kids will run in the room, or something will happen. And it's like, if you just don't brush that off and you actually like think about it, you're like, okay, these people have real lives. Like, yeah, they're doing some amazing things, but they have real lives just like you and me. They're no different than you and me. And yeah, they've done some incredible things, but they're just normal people. And if we just put in the work and do the things that they've done, then we can do it too. And so that's been really helpful for me, is it gave me a lot of motivation to realize that these people that I look up to, they're no different than me. And although they've done amazing things, they're just a little bit ahead of me. It doesn't mean I won't get there someday.
That's special. And yeah, when we said pre-recording with you, Ben and I were like, oh, we're interviewing Robert. Like, it hasn't even hit me yet. Mm. And we said, until we get on the Zoom with you and see your face and actually talk with you, it's like, they hit us straight away. It's like far out. Especially someone that we've been looking up to for so long. And it's like, we're in front of you right now. So yeah, I love that advice. And Goggins also talks about that. He says like, people call me crazy.
people just excuse that I'm just built different or whatever. And they make that excuse for themselves to not pursue and do crazy things.
Well, that's exactly it. If you categorize these people as special or amazing, or that they have something that you don't have, you can use that as like, oh, I can feel okay because they have something I don't have. So it's okay that I don't do X, Y, and Z. But, you know, so it is a little bit kind of daunting in the sense that you realize that that's not true. And so if you don't, you know, reach your goals, it's not because of them having something that you don't have. It's you not doing what you need to do. And so that can be a little daunting, but it's also liberating to realize that it's up to you.
100%.
And if you're doing the things that they're doing, you're already being it, and you are. So if you're trying to be like a professional podcaster, if you act like a professional podcaster and you do the habits and you do put the hard work in and you do your research before jumping into a interview, you are being a professional podcaster. So it's like that kind of mindset, which is awesome.
Yeah. And you don't know, like, maybe let's just use this as an example. You guys are doing this podcast. Maybe it doesn't become super successful. Maybe it's not like the biggest podcast ever. I don't know. I hope it is for you guys, but if it, let's just say it's not, maybe you learn something from this that is a skill that you can apply to something else. I can't tell you how many things that I worked on that didn't work out that I learned something from that I've applied to other business ventures, projects, side hustles, whatever it is, that have made me way more successful than I would have been had I not done those other things. And so, you know, that's kind of how I got to work with TIP in the first place, was that I had done some freelance writing on my own about stock investing, and I was just kind of doing it for fun. And, you know, ideally I wanted it to scale and grow, and it never did. But what it did do was allow me to build that skill set of how to do that. And then when I met with TIP, I was able to leverage that, show them what I knew. And that's how I ended up, you know, being able to become a host with them. So you don't know necessarily. There's a saying, and I'm going to butcher it, but basically it's really easy to connect the dots looking backwards, but it's nearly impossible to connect the dots going forward. You have no idea what's going to be beneficial for you. You just have to do what you think is right, learn the skills, and realize that just because something doesn't necessarily work out the way you wanted it to, there's probably something else you can utilize those skills for going forward.
Mm. And it really is, at the end of the day, about the journey and I guess what you learn on the journey as well, because there's definitely ups and downs. And on a small scale, like what we're doing, there's ups and downs. Like sometimes as you said, we're getting left on red every every message, damn it. Potentially, let's say this doesn't work out, but then another business opportunity opens up. It's all relatable at the end of the day, and you can sort of translate that.
Too many people accept bad things happening as just the end all be all. They're like, okay, this bad thing happened. Nothing, like, that's it. Whereas I personally believe something good comes from every bad situation. No matter what that situation is, I think something good can come from it. If you look hard enough, if you try to make the best of it, I think there's always an opportunity to make something good from something bad. So maybe that's a business failure. Maybe it's a project you're working on that doesn't work out, whatever it is. I think you can make it good if you choose to.
Two last little questions that we want to sort of throw to you, because we're obviously conscious of your time. Looking back, what advice would you give to 20-year-old Robert, sort of making his way either through college and things like that?
So I think what I would tell myself is just what we just talked about, is that you don't have to know where everything is going. You don't have to have everything figured out. And I'm kind of chuckling myself as I give that advice, because I'm probably one of the most type A OCD people that you will ever meet. I plan and I plan and then I plan to plan and then I plan to plan to plan to plan. Like it's ridiculous. Like I plan too much. And I think if I could look back, I would tell myself that you don't need to do that. You don't need to know necessarily where you're going. Getting started and putting something out there is far more important than being perfect. I struggle with perfectionism a lot and trying to wait till things are perfect. And so just getting stuff out there is far more important than perfection. And so that's what I would tell myself. And like I said, I had my son very young. I didn't even want kids in the first place. So when that happened, I thought my life was over. Like, my high school class, I was voted most likely to be a billionaire. I always worked super hard. Like, people knew that I was kind of like quote unquote destined for something great. And I had that same expectations for myself. And so when I found out, like, oh my God, I'm a dad at 22. Like, what am I going to do? Like, this is, my life is over. And in reality, that, you know, it's not a bad situation, but it could be taken in a bad sense sometimes for me. You know, there's times where I was like, not overly happy about it, because I couldn't see like that there was still opportunity out there. And at the time, my mindset was not that you could turn something good out of anything bad that happens, like we just talked about. And so just realizing that is probably the biggest thing I tell myself. And also the last thing is that education is important, whether it be traditional or non-traditional, but action is way more important. Action is everything. Education is useful to a point, but action is everything.
Yeah, I want to touch on the part of not knowing what you want to do. And that's exactly like us, really. And that's why we started this podcast, for people relatable to us that are, you know, this typical commerce student or any other person kind of out there. There's only like not 5% of people that really know exactly what they want to do, and their path is clear and they get there and they're passionate about it. But for all the other people, we always constantly try and find out like, what is my passion? And I think the older we're getting and navigating through things, it's just that whole, you just have to try things. And once you get there, do you enjoy it? That's the ask the question, and then move on to the next thing, if not. But I also want to talk about, like, you would have had to mature so early on, and especially 22 years old. Like, I can't even look after myself at the moment in terms of doing everything. Like, could you touch on some of the things you learned about yourself going navigating through that?
So I think you touched on something really important. And the, one of the reasons why that was such a difficult experience for me was because I was in that 5%, say, that knew what they wanted to do. Ever since, like, literally, if you had asked me since the day I was like 8 years old, when people be like, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? I literally would say CEO. Like, I'm this little kid running around like, what do you want to be when you're older? I want to be a CEO. Like, I knew. I've always known, like, in high school, as soon as I went to high school, like, my friends were all struggling. Like, where am I going to go to college? What am I going to major in? What am I going to study? I knew all along I wanted accounting or finance. Like, there was no doubt in my mind. I never had any stress about that. I knew exactly what I wanted to do. So when I had this curveball thrown at me that I didn't expect, that was not part of that plan, it was like, oh my God, what am I going to do now? And I think that was probably more of it than anything, was that I just had this plan that I thought was perfect in my head and how I was going to get to what I wanted to do. And then I had a big wrench thrown in that I wasn't expecting. And so I think that was what made it difficult. But what I learned about myself is, thankfully, I was always considered mature for my age. Like, even in high school, even younger, I was always told that I was really mature for my age. So thankfully, and I had a pretty good job. I was out of college. I was still doing my MBA, but I had a good, relatively good job. I was able to purchase, buy a house. So like, I was in a good spot to deal with the life circumstances that were thrown at me. I definitely, you know, I know people who are still living at their parents who are much younger, don't have a job, and, you know, are stuck in the same situation. That can be a little bit more difficult than where I was. So I was thankfully in a pretty good spot. But what I really learned was, all I cared about before that was money. Like I said, my superlative in high school, I don't know if you guys have this in Australia, but basically at the end of your senior year, you have like these ballots where you vote for like nicest eyes, prettiest smile, most likely to be successful, et cetera. I literally was voted from a high school class. We have like 600 kids in my class. It was decent size. I was most likely to be a billionaire because I cared about money. That's all I wanted. I wanted a private jet. I wanted mansions. Like, I wanted all that. And then I realized when my son was born that, and it wasn't like the second he was born, it kind of evolved over like a year or two that he was growing up a little bit. But I realized that the money wasn't important to me anymore. I mean, you need money to a certain extent, and I do care about money. I still want to be successful, but not to the level of needing billions. Like, I'd be okay with millions. And it's more being able to control my time, because what I realize is that billionaires don't have a lot of control over their time. They might make a lot of money. They might have a lot of money, but a lot of them don't have control of their time. And so there's this concept of being a time billionaire. And I just realized that I would much rather be able to choose what I'm doing and not have as much money than be like ridiculously billionaire wealthy. I also, somebody sat me down and did this exercise. They said, write down like the most outrageous things that you could ever imagine yourself wanting. Write down the car, like a fancy car. If you want a fancy car, write down the car you want. Write down the house you want. Write down all these different things that you like, your perfect life. What would you imagine? And I did that exercise, and it wasn't that much money. It was a lot of money to like an everyday person, right? The average person makes $50,000, $60,000 a year in the US. It's a lot of money to that compared to that. But like when I thought I needed to be a billionaire to have all these things, I quickly realized that like 5 or 10 million, maybe 20 million is going to satisfy that same thing versus needing a billion. And I know people are probably listening to this like, you know, 5, 10, 20 million, that's a ton of money. And you're right, it is. But when you consider that to a billion, it's not even close. Like 1,000 million is so much different. So to me, I was just like, okay, well, maybe I don't need to go, you know, 100% all the time, pass up on all these different things that I want to do and enjoy life a little bit to reach my wildest dreams if I even want those certain things. And so that was really the big mindset shift that I went through.
Yeah, wow. And I can tell, even as you're growing up, what you've had and held strong is a growth mindset. Like even the way you're talking about 5 million, 10 million, 20 million, it's achievable. Like when you talk about it like that, you already made it. Do you know what I mean? And I think that that's something that you've probably held really closely as you've grown up. And yes, you may not be able to, I guess, control things out of your external circle, but you sure can, I guess, control things with that's inside as well. No, that's incredible and awesome advice. And you've had an incredible journey.
Well, thank you guys. I really appreciate it. And I mean, just growth mindset is the biggest thing. And I just, you know, realize that there's a lot of opportunity out there. Everybody can win. It's not always a zero sum game. You can win, I can win, right? Like you guys have a podcast. I hope you guys become the biggest podcast there is. And that's not going to hurt me because there's a lot of podcast listeners out there. People can listen to more than one podcast if they want. And so there are some games. There are some games in business where it is a win, lose, or a zero sum game. That's just kind of the way it is. But there are a lot of situations in life that are not that way. And if you can get into the areas of life and business where multiple people can win, it's one of the reasons why I like real estate. A lot of people can win in the same transaction without anybody losing. And it's a really good place to be.
Awesome. Wow, that was powerful. We just want to kind of, we probably consciously of time and you already head off, but thank you so much for coming onto the show. And this has been incredible. And hopefully that maybe one day down the track, we can get another episode going and dive into real estate or dive into investing. Because yeah, it was awesome chat today. And thank you for coming onto the show.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, guys. I really, really appreciate all the support you guys give me and my show. And I hope I lived up to the hype for you guys. And I hope I provided some value to your audience and certainly happy to do it again.
For sure. Really quickly, I do want to throw over to you. If you could give our listeners and our audience hand over to where they can find out more about you or the podcast you've got going on, social media, and things like that.
Best place to find me is on social media, Instagram or Twitter. Both usernames are The Robert Leonard. I do it like we talked about. There's a ton of stuff that I do. So instead of trying to find each thing individually, best place is just go to my social media. You'll be able to find everything. You'll find the podcast. You'll find online courses that I'm creating, any other content that I'm doing, and just follow along with the journey there. So that's the best way to find everything that I'm doing is just connect on social.
Perfect. And make sure you type in The Robert Leonard, because I think you've had some scam accounts coming through.
Oh yeah, there's been a lot of them. There's nothing I could do about them. I try to get them shut down, but I need Instagram to verify me. Instagram, if you guys are listening.
Verify a boy. No, thanks again, man. And we'll catch you next time.
Thanks so much.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. And if you want to stay up to date with what's new, remember to press follow on your chosen podcast platform.
You can find us on Instagram and LinkedIn at Young Opportunist. Once again, thanks for listening.
Catch you next time.